Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, it's Mr. Encore. Fantasy sports and politics crew. Yeah, check. Fantasy sports and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.
That time again. You know what time it is. Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. I am JT, a.k.a. The Master. And it's a fine Thursday evening, the 16th day of April. And this is the FSB Crew Show. If you'd like to join us, you can log on at www.blogtalkradio.com/VICHBK, or you can call in 1-347-637-3220. 347-637-3220 is a place to be if you want to talk to me. Got a great show in store for you tonight. Going to be talking about some NFL. Going to be talking about maybe the beginning of the baseball season, and playoff basketball is right around the corner. The principals in the West and the Eastern Conference are set. Matchups going to be pretty interesting, especially in the West, the very competitive West, where I think the eight can beat the one. It's not likely, but anything's possible. It's been done before. But we'll be talking about that. And some off-the-field stuff in the NFL also. Like I said, I am here, and my esteemed co-host is also here joining me, talking about Jeff the Jerker. Always saying it's my fellow Jersey guy, because that's what he is. Triple J. Jersey Jeff the Joker. What's up, my man? How you been?
I'm good, Jerry. How about you?
All right, my man. We are in the throes of the beginning. I should say we were in the beginning of the NBA playoff season. I think it starts... Probably starts the weekend, if I'm not mistaken. I don't have the schedule in front of me. I will shortly have it in front of me. And there's some interesting matchups. At the end of the last day of the NBA regular season, some teams were moved around, and surprisingly enough, the Houston Rockets, who were at one point the third, fourth, or fifth seed, if I'm not mistaken, are now the second seed. So quite naturally, everybody knows, should know, that the Golden State Warriors are the number one seed in the West, and also with the best record in the NBA, with 67-15. Just think about that. I'm thinking to myself, Jeff, the Golden State Warriors in that highly competitive Western Conference, 67-15. The eighth seed. I'm talking about the New Orleans Pelicans, who haven't been in the playoffs in, I think, close to a decade, if I'm not mistaken, are... Hey, get this, they're 45-37. So if they were in the Eastern Conference, they would be the sixth seed, but one game off of the Washington Wizards, who have 46-36. So the Eastern Conference, which surprisingly enough have seven teams, and I think this is the six teams. I'm sorry, Jeff, that have five teams that have a winning record versus eight teams in the Western Conference that have all winning records. If you want to count the Milwaukee Bucks, who finished at 500, they don't have a winning record. They're at 500. They don't have a loser record either. So that would be the sixth seed. I think this is probably the best showing in a while for the Western Conference, who usually have more than two teams that are in the playoffs that have below 500 records. So, and quite naturally, our Knicks, our New York basketball Knicks, have the worst record, not in the league, but the worst record in the Eastern Conference, winning a resounding 17 games and losing 65. So just the opposite of what the Golden State Warriors have done in the regular season, and having 65. In fact, the Golden State Warriors won more games, just two more games than the Knicks lost. First, before we go to the playoff and playoffs of these 16 teams, what's your thoughts on the Knicks? And I read something before you go there. I read something today that Carmelo Anthony, sometime during the season, has second guessed him re-signing with the Knicks. I guess quite naturally because how bad they were, but said he's definitely on the positive side of turning this thing around in New York. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, but it's crazy, though. The Knicks went on a little hot streak late in the season, just enough to lose very important ping pong balls, That's the mark of a truly bad team. And it's just one of these things. Everybody talks about it every year, about teams tanking late in the season, which the thing is, when they started with the lottery, it was supposed to cut down on it, but it doesn't eliminate it. It can't, because it won't guarantee a team being last, but it'll give them more ping pong balls, which is what teams want. It's very complicated. I wish I could remember the game. I mean, I'm a very casual NBA fan, but there was one of these games, this past week, and it was the classic, the one team needed to win to make the playoffs and the other team, right, was bottom rung team, no shot at the playoffs, whatever. And
right,
that last place team won. And I love to see that. It usually happens at least once a year, and there's a lot fewer games in the NFL, week 16, week 17, and it's like a sucker bet almost, because everybody thinks, oh, this is a sure thing. And I think it's usually because the better team is just playing one big game after another. They come up flat, and the other team, they show a little pride. And I just love seeing that, because that's what it's about. I'll tell you, though, this NBA playoffs really drags on. And I don't like to see, in any sport, sub 500 teams in the playoffs. But,
right,
and the thing is with the NBA, you got eight teams in each conference. Okay, I get it. So even with that, it's usually the top two teams, one of the top two teams from each conference. So what are they going through all this stuff for? And it kind of makes the regular season less important. I think it was maybe 3 years ago, San Antonio received a lot of criticism for, resting, their three veteran stars during the season. And you know what? Now at least they're honest about it, which I actually like that better than lying about an injury that doesn't exist, because that rubs me the wrong way. You know what I'm talking about?
Sure, sure.
You know, and
well,
go ahead,
Jeff.
Well, you know,
no, go ahead.
I even had an experience with this myself just as a fan. I got cousins in the Trenton area, and the Sixers were playing one of their preseason games there. And, they got good seats, and it was cheap, and they invited me. It was cool, And, so I'm looking forward to see the star players. And this was a while ago. Malone was still playing for Utah, and
right.
He had an excused absence, and they said that his father, I think it was very ill back where he grew up in Louisiana, and he was visiting with his father because he wasn't going to have time during the season. And you know what? I'll give him the benefit of doubt. That's a truth, because that's a horrible lie. And it's better than saying, the mailman's got a sore knee, which doesn't exist. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
At least I didn't like being lied to as a fan. And I'm like, well, I would have liked to have seen him. But you kind of know that thing could happen any game, especially a preseason game. And it was still a good game, So, nobody likes to be lied to.
Well, that's true. There could be no lies here. We're going to talk about the playoffs. And, I'm talking about playoffs. Saturday starts the playoffs, and there's five playoff games that are going to take place. Two in the East. Four playoff games. I'm sorry. Two in the East, two in the West. Starting off with the Washington, and this is going to be probably a good matchup, because usually these matchups that are one seed, just one tick above the other team, which is the 4-5 seed in the East, which is the Washington Wizards, who are the fifth seed, versus the Toronto Raptors in Toronto. It's playing in Toronto, starting off the playoffs. Picture in the NBA playoffs in Toronto at 12:30 p.m. All these games are supposed to three to four games are going to be on ESPN, and one game is going to be all on ESPN. From what I'm seeing here, you can watch it on ESPN probably online. I think one of them may be on ABC. Washington and Toronto is the first one at 12:30, and what's your thoughts? Now, Washington Wizards are in the playoffs. They were in playoffs last year. Now they're back in the playoffs again with one more year of experience. I think this is probably an easier matchup than they – and I can't remember who they had last year. Maybe it was the Hawks in the first round. I think they may have – I'm not exactly sure who they had in last year. But they're back in the playoffs this year, and they're playing Toronto. What's your thoughts on – the outlook of the Washington Wizards versus the Toronto Raptors, and who's going to win this matchup and move on to the second round to face the winner of the I guess it would be 4-5. Would probably, it all depends on who wins. But who you like in this matchup between Washington and Toronto?
Well, I think the 4-5. Would most likely play the winner of a 1-8, unless I think it, the most likely winner, of course, is the 1. If the 8 wins, then they would win it would be the winner of the 2-7,
Right, that's why they didn't go that route. I just wanted to find out who
and
wins.
And if they don't recede, because people have talked about that, I don't know if it's worth the trouble. I mean, I'm not that familiar with either of those teams. It's a 4-5. Those are very closely matched. I'm not sure which one is hotter. Last 10, Toronto is 1-7 of the last 10. I mean, that occasionally comes into play in the NBA. you know, if one team gets healthy or gets hot at the last minute, that could kind of make them better than their record. I think these are two, you know, fairly close teams. So I don't think there's a real big clear favorite on this.
Yeah, Toronto's the 7-3 in the last 10. Washington Wizards are 6-4 in the last 10. But Toronto won their last game. The Wizards lost their last two. So the Wizards are on a down note, if so to speak, because they lost their last two. And Toronto has won, just one. So, you know, you're right. This is a toss-up match to me. Toronto's got the home court advantage, being the four seed. Toronto scores more, but gives up more, too. They score 104 points versus giving up 100.9. The Wizards score about 5.5 points left. They score about 98.5 points, and they play a better defense. They give up 97.8. So you're right. The Toronto Raptors have about a 3-point edge, a little more than about 3-point edge in games per game, and the Washington Wizards have about a 1-point margin, if that. Not even a 1-point. Oh, it'd be about 1.7, about a 2-point margin. So these teams should be highly competitive and probably go down to the last one or two possessions. And it's the best out of seven, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, going from that, let's progress over to the team that had to win to get in. And they won last night, and they won against the world champs, which I was real surprised about. And they had a double-digit lead at one point that the well-experienced team of the San Antonio Spurs whittled it down, but they finally succumbed to the Pelicans, who didn't fold under pressure of the San Antonio Spurs and got into the playoffs. But the Pelicans now have the privilege, so to speak, because they're the eighth seed to play the best team record-wise right now in the NBA, and that would be the Golden State Warriors. The Pelicans won the last two. The last 10, they've won 7 out of 10 games. The Golden State Warriors have won their last 4, 8-2 in their last 2 games. I mean, last 10 games. Jeff, now, this may be a no-brainer, but I still got to ask you, because this is not the first time that it's possible that a 8 can beat a 1. I don't think it's going to happen in this circumstance, but stranger things have happened. The Pelicans have a small margin of victory, 99.4. They score, and their opponents score 98.6. That's a... just less than a point difference in win and loss margin versus the Golden State Warriors. Now get this. They score 110 points a game and almost limit the same amount of points that the Pelicans do, 99.9. So the average margin of victory is like 10 points, basically 10 points. What's your thought?
You know, I'm trying to think of when an 8 seed beats a 1 seed in the NBA, and if there's something typical about those type of matchups. I'm trying to – now, this is at least 5 years ago. It was maybe closer to 10, I think. Well, somewhere between then. It was Dallas when – I think this is when they still had oh, God, I can't believe I – that ugly guy who scored a lot of points and now he's hanging around the Lakers. he looked like Kelly Leak from the Bad News – they still had him, Nash. Yeah, that was when they still had Nash. They had Nowitzki. They won like 60 games or so, rolled through the regular season, and it was Golden State was good defensively and very physical, and bam, shut them down. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it would be a big shock if Golden State stumbled in the first round. But it's possible, it could happen, but this doesn't look like it. And the thing is, teams kind of, sometimes, for lack of a better term, they'll ease up a little, try to get their star players some more rest towards the end of the season, because that's the knock, that the regular season is like the preseason. Because the thing is, if you win 60 games, you win your division. I mean, maybe if you're a very young team, it looks good, but that doesn't make the fans happy. That doesn't get you a ring. The regular season is a lot of that. It's just getting in position for a strong playoff run.
Well, to refresh your memory, Jeff, this is the last time it happened. It happened 21 years ago, 1994, when the 8-seeded Denver Nuggets played at the number one seed, which would be at the time the Seattle Supersonics, and the famed Mokembe Mutombo laying on the floor with the ball in his hand, with huge grin on his face, when they upset the number one seed, who had won 63 games that year, and had won the first two games in that series. So it's been 21 years, and you can't say it's never been done, because it has been done, and also been done by the Denver Nuggets. Now, that's 21 years ago. I mean, there's 21 eighth seeds since then that have tried to dethrone the one seed from advancing in the playoffs. It hasn't happened. But stranger things have happened, and you got one of the best big men in the game in the unibrow and on the Pelicans that is going to try to derail Steph Curry, Klay Thompson and company from moving to the next round and facing whoever is the winner of the 4-5 in the West. So I'm going to ask you, because I have to ask you, and I don't know if you gave me the answer or not, but I'm going to ask you anyway. New Orleans at Golden State, 3:30 p.m. on Saturday, ABC, prime time. Or not good time, at 3:30 in the afternoon, not prime time. What's your thoughts on that before we move on to the next matchup?
Oh, got Golden State.
Okay, that was short and sweet.
I kind of said why before. I don't know. It's just, it's not impossible. I mean, this is major league, pro sports, but it's hard to imagine Golden State is stubbing their toes so early. I just don't see it.
Okay. All right. Then we slip back into the Eastern Conference, and a resurging, a rejuvenated, a somewhat healthy Chicago Bulls team, who are now the 3 seed, winning the last four, 7 out of their last 10. Is going to be playing the Milwaukee Bucks, who lost their last one and were playing 500 ball on the last 10, meaning they won 5-5. Playing in Chicago, Derrick Rose is steadily progressing from his early season injury. He's playing better, and the whole team as a whole is playing better. What's your thoughts on Chicago Bulls at home playing the Milwaukee Bucks?
This is an example of, a team getting healthy and maybe getting hot at the right time. But, Rose, he gets a paper cut. He could be out for a couple months, and I think this was something kind of in the back of my mind for last week. I'll tell you, this season, it's, and there's probably, you know, some statistics for this. Many, it seems, star players, including Derrick Rose and a lot of others, have missed a lot of games, and that hurts the league. I mean, there's only so many star players. I mean, of course, Carmelo, I'm familiar with because they're playing for the Knicks, but, Dwight Howard, Blake Griffin, so many. Are these big star players and missed a lot of games. And these are the faces of the league. These are the guys who they market, you know?
Yep. So who are you like in this matchup between Chicago and Milwaukee?
I guess a slight lean towards Chicago, I guess.
Yeah, the Milwaukee Bucks margin of victory is 0.4. 0.4. They scored 97.8 games, and their opponent scores 97.4. The Chicago Bulls are +3 in the point differential, 100.8 in the four and 97.8 against their opponent. So I would have to say probably the higher seed is going to win. That is going to, in my opinion, Chicago. I'm side along with you. Now, this is pretty interesting here. And I think these Western Conference matchups are going to be highly competitive because, quite naturally, if you look at the record, these records have been highly competitive. These two teams, the Dallas Mavericks, who are playing the Houston Rockets in Houston. Houston's the 2 seed, Dallas being the 7th seed. Believe that. Dallas the 7th seed. They won 50 games and in the 7th seed, while Houston won 56. Dallas has scored 105 points, 105.2, and their opponents score 102.3, which is a point differential of 2.9, versus the Houston Rockets, who score 103.9, score less points, and give up, but they give up less points too, 100.5, which is a point differential of +3.4. Houston Rockets have Dwight Howard back for a while. James Harden is playing at the top of his game. Houston's won the last 3, 7 out of the last 10. Dallas lost the last one and played 500 ball out of the last 10. Who you like there playing in Houston to start the series off? To end the night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Dallas at Houston. Who do you like in that series?
See, this is where I wish I could do a little research, because if Dallas would upset Houston, it would need something like, I don't know how Tyson Chandler's been playing, but let's say, I don't know how he does against Dwight, but you never know. Once in a while, let's say, if Tyson has a history and he owns Dwight, then there's that could be the key matchup to swing a series.
Right.
I don't think that's the case. But, once in a while, those things can happen. And one of the unique things about the NBA playoffs is teams in the NBA don't play series. You play one game against a team. And I hate when they play the same team back-to-back. They do a home-and-home. I hate those. Like,
mm-hmm.
who wants to play the same team twice in a row? As a fan, you don't want to see it. I mm-hmm. absolutely hate those. They should just stop doing those.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, so all season long, 82 games, for the most part, every game one night stand, or whatever. And then, boom, in the playoffs, then you're dealing with the 7-game series, which is a huge difference. And the coaches got to do things differently and whatever, and it's it does make the playoffs very unique. But, yeah, I guess I said it early, but, I guess I go with Houston, but you never know.
Okay.
It's not like I've really researched it, so.
Okay. Well, this is going to be a very interesting one here, Jeff, because and I didn't realize this until I'm seeing it on the screen here. the number two seed, the Cleveland Cavaliers, who score 103.1 points a game versus giving up 98.7, which is a point differential of plus 4.5. One of the last two, seven out of the last ten, are playing the seventh seed, Boston Celtics, who score 101.4 points, and then against 101.2, which is a point differential of 0.02. It's the hottest team in the NBA, winning the last six and eight out of their last ten, playing their first game with the LeBron-esque Cleveland Dream Team. What's your thoughts, Boston at Cleveland, 3 o'clock on Sunday on ABC? What's your thoughts on this game? Now, I know everybody's going to go with LeBron because it's LeBron and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love, but I give because the way Boston's been playing, winning the last six, I have to give the nod, in my opinion, the first game to Boston. I don't know about this series, but I think this is going to be a tougher series than most people think. What's your thoughts?
Wow. Yeah, you're right, because I remember beginning of the year, everybody was talking about, you know, the unfab four of the NBA, four of the big market teams, the Knicks, the Lakers, Philly, and Boston. And Boston really pulled it together. I mean, Philly, they ended the season losing their last 10. Now, that's the way you close out a season, to get those ping-pong balls, you know. I mean, that's how you do it, you know. You know, these are the big market teams, but, you know, eventually your luck runs out, or, you know, bad management decisions and whatever. Yeah, I mean, you got to respect Boston for pulling it together, but still, I mean, you know, this is LeBron plus a lot of other good players. I think he'd been accused of this before. It almost seals it. Kevin Love, I think he might be one of these guys who's very happy to put up good numbers for an average or worse team. You know, not everybody's priority is winning or whatever. They don't want the aggravation. They just want the ball. They want to get the numbers. They want to get paid. He might be one of those guys. I mean,
right?
Doesn't mean he's a bum. Who knows? He might not re-sign with Cleveland. And I'll tell you, another guy like that, Darren Williams, you know, because, you know, everybody wants to have a star guy, and there's only a few, but just because you overpay a guy who's borderline, that's not going to make him a superstar. I think he's a guy. He was happy in Utah, not a lot of publicity, not a lot of winning, but he was getting pretty well paid, and I don't think he likes New York and the people who want to win. It's very hard to see roughly 500 team beating Cleveland in the first round of the playoffs, because besides the talent, and, you know, I think you're going to see this more as LeBron gets older. I mean, I think he's 30, but, you know, hey, he's been playing full-time NBA since 18. You know, I think you're going to see him pacing himself more, you know, taking games off once in a while, because he's smart, you know. I don't think I'd be very surprised. Did he officially stop playing for the national team? Things like that, just, because he knows what it takes to win big. And, you know, I'm sure he's been pacing himself for a playoff run. And I'm sure he's very, very focused. And, you know, he's got the supporting cast. And one of those guys, another guy, I think you could say he's a front runner, J.R. Smith, you know. He played well and stayed out of trouble with the Knicks just long enough to get a good contract, you know. And, you know, so now, you know, he goes to Cleveland, he plays great, you know, he's an important piece there. But believe me, you know, after he gets the ring, then he'll go back to his antisocial ways or whatever. And it really kills me sometimes like when you see a guy who stunk for your team playing well on a championship run, it's like, oh, you know, it's a killer.
Right. All right.
I mean, sometimes if it's a guy, he leaves on good terms. Hey, you wish him well. But if that's not the case, if he was dogging it for your team, but now he's revived because he's playing for a ring, it's like, hey, where was that kind of heart when he was on my squad, you know?
That's true. All right, speaking of Deron Williams, the next matchup I'm going to bring up is the 8th-seeded Brooklyn Nets versus the number one seed in the East, the Atlanta Hawks, who score about 102.5 points a game and give up 97.1 with a point differential of plus 5.4, but lost their last three games and finished out the last 10 5-5 versus the Brooklyn Nets. Now get this. They score 98 points a game and give up 100.9. The only playoff team with a minus point differential, 2.9, almost 3 points differential in for and against in points. They won the last one to squeak into the playoffs, and the last 10 was they won 6 out of the last 10. And I'm not a big fan of the Nets at all. I'm definitely not a big fan of Deron Williams, a coach killer in my opinion. When Jerry Sloan, who's a very tough guy, when he played and a very tough guy when he coached, quits because the fact is, and I do believe this, that it was probably him or Deron Williams, and Deron Williams wasn't going anywhere at the time, and so he had to quit to get away from that situation. I'm not a big Deron Williams fan. I think he's a me guy, and me, give me the ball. Even though he's a point guard, I think he's just not the type of guy that you really want on your team. Because if you listen to Paul Pierce, and he singled out Deron Williams, one of these guys that more or less is a me guy and plays when he feels like it, and most of the time he doesn't feel like it. And that if you listen to Paul Pierce, said that him and Kevin Garnett had to push this team to practice well and to play well in regular season games, that – in my opinion, this is probably a no-brainer, in my opinion. I mean, they may give a – because it's the Atlanta Hawks, and the Atlanta Hawks have been somewhat a streaky team also. But I think that the Atlanta Hawks' mindset and the way they've been playing this year are going to quickly dispatch to Brooklyn Nets. Talk to me, Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with that. Now, I keep thinking this last week. Right, I think it was the day of the show, the day before the show, that forward, what's this, Safalashka, with Atlanta. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's out now.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, it wasn't like he was a star player. And these guys are pros. I doubt they'd be distracted much. But if, you know, this goes to a game 6, game 7, everybody's going to say, oh, Atlanta was distracted. I mean, I'm curious. I think a lot of people, I didn't realize that NBA teams will fly right after a game. And it never occurred to me, these guys get into town at like 1 a.m. and then they're hitting the clubs. I don't want to go too much of a tangent, but I just was unaware of that. I don't like the back-to-backs. I don't think it's possible to eliminate them. I think the league makes an effort to cut down on them, but I don't like the back-to-backs.
Okay. All right. So I imagine you're picking the Atlanta Hawks. You're not picking the Nets. Am I right about that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
Okay. All right. Then we move on to another Western Conference game, which is the the 5th-seeded Memphis Grizzlies against the 4th-seeded Portland Trail Blazers. The Trail Blazers score 102.8 points a game, give up, and they're pretty good on the defensive side, one of the better ones in the playoffs, 98.6 with a point differential of 4.2. Unfortunately, they've lost their last 4 games, and they have one of the worst records of all the playoff teams, if not the worst record. of 4-6 out of their last 10 versus the Memphis Grizzlies, who are for years have been one of the better defensive teams in the league. They play a great brand of basketball. They only score 98.3 points a game, but give up 95.1, which I think is probably the best out of all the playoff teams, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it is. And their point differential is 3.2. They won their last one. This is a team that's won 5 out of their last 10 games. So they're one of these 500 teams that in the last 10 games. 4-5, Western Conference. There's only 4 games that separate these teams in the win column. Portland went in 51, Memphis went in 55. What's your thoughts, Jeff? I like in this game, I like Memphis because of their defensive prowess, and it seems like Portland is on the negative side of the way they're playing versus some of these other teams that have been playing pretty positive. Talk to me.
Yeah, I think you made a very good point because I think these playoff games are a little more physical, more defensive, and that would favor Memphis. So, yeah, I think they're a few more wins, but they're the lower seed. I guess, whatever. But, yeah, I think Memphis, 55. It's a lot of wins for a fifth seed. is the stronger conference.
You always know that the Western Conference is very competitive. You got every team with a winning record versus two teams in the East that have below 500 records. But we do have another caller coming up here. He was here last week giving his insight, and he's also back with us again talking about Lance, the NFL exporter. What's up, Lance? How you doing, my man?
What's going on, Jeff? How you doing? Jerry, everything is going well. Figured you guys will be talking some playoffs, NBA playoffs, so definitely wanted to join the show today.
Okay. Well, we happen to be on the next-to-last matchup of the first round, or first game, I should say, of the NBA playoffs. And it's Portland versus Memphis. Memphis is playing better, even though they only won 5 of the last 10 games. Portland's on a 4-game losing streak. What's your thoughts, or give me some insight on what you think about Portland versus Memphis and the not just this game, but their first series.
Yeah, and who did you say has home court in this? I like what the NBA has done. I would like to see the NFL do the same thing where, regardless of seed, the team with the better record is going to get home court advantage. I heard you guys mention like every team in the West is pretty much stacked. Who has home court in this series?
Memphis.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give Memphis the edge then. Kind of looking at this matchup, you know, I kind of echo you guys' sentiments. Memphis is a defensive team, and I think home court advantage in the first round with these teams being so evenly matched can hold true. I think health, though, is a major concern. You know, Portland lost Wesley Matthews a little bit after the All-Star game. LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't know if he's going to be 100%, but Memphis had some injuries as well. So I just think watching out for injuries for both teams is going to be key. I know Conley Jr. had like a foot injury he was nursing the last week. Gasol kind of rolled his ankle. So both teams have some injuries, but I think that, you know, home court, I think the veteran, you know, Memphis, a little bit more seasoned veteran, and I think down low as well, they have an advantage. But it should be a great series. You know, I mean, these teams merit themselves. Should be a great matchup between Lillard and Conley Jr. You certainly look at Aldridge and Robin Lopez taking on Gasol and Zach Randolph. So, yeah, I think it'll be a great series, but I ultimately give Memphis the edge due to home court and their veteran experience.
All right. And then we move on, fellas, to the last game of the first round of the first set games on this weekend, which would be and the world champs, San Antonio Spurs, who happened to be, believe it or not, the sixth seed, winning 55 games, and they're the sixth seed. They score 103.2 points a game, versus, and this they happen to be the second best defensive team in the playoffs right now, giving their opponents 97 points a game with a plus point differential of 6.2. Unfortunately, they lost to the Pelicans the last game, but they were 9-1 in their last 10 versus the Los Angeles Clippers, who happen to be the number 3 seed, who score 106.7 a game, 106.7 points a game, and give up 100.1 with a point differential of 6.6. They've won 7 games, so they've got the best record going down the stretch of the last 10 games. They won 9 of the last 10, right along with the San Antonio Spurs. This is going to be a hell of a matchup versus basically youth versus elder statesmen in the league, the champs versus these young bucks that are finally trying to get over the hump. They always seem to come up short. They're playing in L.A. because they're the number one seed, meaning the Clippers. Who do you got in this? I'm going to go to Jeff first and then Lance. Talk to me, Jeff.
Wow. This is very tough. I think the star players for the Clippers are healthy. I mean, San Antonio, they were supposed to have been done 2 years ago. I mean, they look like the team of the future. Besides the three superstars with all these international players, and they're also excellent players, great coach. But, I mean, the Clippers have talent. I don't know, just maybe based on experience and whatever, and they know how to gear up for the playoffs, give a slight edge to San Antonio, I think.
Talk to me, Lance.
Yeah, I'm a guy who, until further notice, until proven otherwise, you go with the proven product. And so I like San Antonio, obviously, with their, you know, the championship experience. I mean, 16 straight years of 50 wins, so 50-plus wins in the regular season. So you know that the proven success, the model of consistency is there. But I think this is a very intriguing matchup for the simple fact that when you look at the coaches, obviously Greg Popovich has more championships, but Doc Rivers has a championship, has been to another NBA final. So I think that usually Popovich holds a huge coaching edge. I don't see it being that way this time. And then when you look at these teams, I think they're pretty evenly matched. You know, from what I've seen over the years, and I think it's kind of the same thing this year in the playoffs, when you look at the Spurs, is that these other teams are unable to stay the course. There's always some type of mental breakdown. There's always some type of error, some type of blown assignment. Something happens, and that's when you see the Spurs and the Patriots and kind of the teams in any sport who kind of dominate for years at a time. They know they take advantage of other people's mistakes. So when I look at the Clippers, they match up very well. Chris Paul is still a top 5 point guard in the league. J.J. Redick's been shooting the heck out of the ball, especially the second half of the season. Jamal Crawford's another guy who can knock down jump shots. Obviously, DeAndre Jordan, his athleticism in the front court, coupled with Blake Griffin. And they got some guys who can come off the bench. They have home court. They're very familiar with San Antonio. And the thing I love about Chris Paul is he's a competitor. He's not going to back down from anybody. And I think he's the perfect type person you need to have on your team if you want to have a chance against the Spurs. I think the other thing that people also forget in basketball, too, as much as big men are important and can dominate a game, it's really a guard game nowadays. You know, the guys in the backcourt, they have the ball in their hands, and you need guys who can knock down shots in crunch time and at the end of the game. And certainly Chris Paul, Jamal Crawford, and J.J. Redick are guys who can do that. So I think everything is in their favor. But, again, if you had to hedge your bet, I think you go with the proven product and you go with the team who, you know, has certainly shown the ability to win on the road and do the things necessary to win a series. So, yeah, I think without question, though, this should be the best first-round series of the playoffs. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
And the NBA knows how to market their teams. They save the best for last. That's the last game of the weekend to close out the weekend of the playoffs to start it off. Anyway, we're going to stay in the NBA, but we're going to go to a something that just got approved. When the NBA and the NBPA signed the last collective bargaining agreement in 2011, there was an agreement between the two sides that they would eventually revisit the subject of blood testing for human growth hormone in players and agreed to a process for implementing it that both sides found fair. That day has come on Thursday. This is from the league's press release on Thursday afternoon. The NBA and the National Basketball Players Association announced today that the blood testing for human growth hormone will commence under the league's anti-drug program effective with the 2015-2016 NBA season. As part of the collective bargaining negotiations in 2011, the NBA and the Players Association agreed to a process for determining how HGH blood testing would be implemented in the NBA. With that process now completed, beginning with the start of the 2015 NBA training camps, all NBA players will be subject to three random and unannounced HGH tests annually, two in-season, one off-season. And players will also be subject to reasonable cause testing for HGH. This is the consequences if you fail the test. If a player tests positive for HGH, he will be suspended 20 games for his first violation, 45 games for his second violation, and he will be dismissed and disqualified from the NBA for his third violation. If a player gets caught in a new policy for PEDs, the penalties are 20 games for the first offense, 45 games for a second time, a lifetime ban for a third. That's for PEDs. The other one is for HGH. Jeff, give me your thoughts on what I just read to you guys, and then I go to Lance.
You know, I'm fine with it. I have no problem. I'd like to see the other leagues follow suit.
Talk to me, Lance.
Yeah, I'm with it. You know, anything that is going to give any player, essentially some type of added or extra advantage, you know, whether it's being able to, run longer, jump higher, stamina, perseverance, energy, whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I think it needs to be an even playing field. I have absolutely no problem with it at all.
Okay. And this also came out today. And it hasn't been finalized yet, but they're close to a deal. After the announcement that Adidas would not extend their NBA deal for apparel rights, rival Nike is close to securing a deal that would take effect come the 2017-2018 NBA season. According to Sports Business Daily, the Swoosh presented a deal to ownership in a meeting in New York today, and both sides have come to an agreement in principle. This also comes with the announcement that Nike will be allowed to put the Swoosh on authentic game jerseys, as well as a rumor that the Jumpman logo would also appear on jerseys, something that would make current Hornets owner Michael Jordan rather happy after he had his brand handle the rebrand of his Charlotte squad's current uniforms. This would mark the first time that a manufacturer will be allowed to have their logo seen on both warm-up apparel and jerseys during actual games. So what can we expect from Nike's probable partnership with the NBA? If this post is any indication, Nike's NCAA elite uniform construction could finally appear at the professional level. Lance, your thoughts? Nike going to be taking over and basically advertising on NBA uniforms now. What's your thoughts on that? Then I go to Jeff.
Yeah, I mean, for the NBA, obviously, the amount of money that Nike is going to be paying to do this, so I'm quite sure for them, a no-brainer. We all know that Nike is a more notable, more respectable brand than Adidas, especially amongst NBA fans as well. So I think that that's a good look there. And for Nike, they're a business. So like any, no matter how big or small, any kind that you can continue to have exposure and brand and market your product, you're going to do that. So, again, if any company has the money to be able to essentially pay for something like this to happen, Nike is surely a company that, pockets are deeper than what we can imagine. So, yeah, I mean, I just think from Nike's standpoint, certainly was a great strategic move for them to continue to, again, brand their company name and logo into everybody's minds. And for the NBA, again, probably a good look. Like you mentioned the relationship with Michael Jordan. We know that plays into it. And let's be honest, Nike, again, at least to from what I see, I don't know about you guys, but, I'm in the gym a couple times a week. I work in a place where dress code is really not an issue. Grocery stores and things of that nature. And still to this day, Nikes are still the number one shoe of preference for customers. So, I think it's a good look.
Jeff, what's your thoughts on the swoosh?
I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. It was probably just a matter of money, of course, because that's what most of this comes down to. I mean, it doesn't bother me. The thing I used to hate to see for it seemed like a long time, I was never a big fan of Penn State, and this was before the scandal. And, they had those no-frills uniforms that they wore for so many years. So, no last name on the back, which to me that looks like a Pee Wee League uniform. But they had the Nike swoosh on the front. And, and Paterno lied and said he had no control. That's a joke. He has much power as anybody except the governor in that state. And every time I saw one of those uniforms, I cringed. And it's not that big a deal. I mean, you ever see some of these European soccer uniforms? They got everything on those.
Yep. All right, we're going to transition from the NBA. We only got a couple minutes on regular airtime, but I think we're going to go over a little because I want to talk about these two guys. First off, going into the NBA, the NFL. As you guys know, because you follow sports just like I do, and this guy has been in one of the top headlines in the NFL off the field. I'm talking about Vikings running back Adrian Peterson, who was looking to be reinstated. Met with the commissioner last week basically checked if he had met all his conditions. He has been removed from the exempt commissioner's list. As a condition of his reinstatement, Peterson must maintain an ongoing program of counseling and treatment as recommended by medical advisors. Now, Adrian Peterson finally got taken off the exempt list. It's about 2 weeks before the NFL draft. He's looking not to be with the Minnesota Vikings. First, I'm going to ask you guys what your thoughts of him finally getting off the commissioner's list. And two, if he's going to stay with the Vikings or if the Vikings come draft day or just before draft day or whatever, move him to another team for draft picks. Being that he's going to be a 30-year-old running back, even though he's Adrian Peterson. Talk to me, Jeff.
I would have been surprised if he didn't get reinstated. And I think Peterson's rubbed me the wrong way because he was ticked off because he thought the Vikings didn't stand by him. Well, he did something pretty bad. I mean, it's very hard to stand by somebody who abuses his child that severely. I know we're getting short on time. And a lesser story. Lawrence Phillips is in trouble again. Did you hear that?
Yes, I heard that.
He messed up his NFL career. That happens, and now he's messed up his life. I mean, this guy's a real, to put it nicely, I wouldn't say a bad apple. He's a rotten apple. And, how could they? I mean, I don't think anyone thought he was that bad, but I guess he is. So, yeah, Lawrence Phillips, go figure.
All right, Lance, take your time. We're definitely going to be going over. What's your thoughts on Adrian Peterson and the two thoughts I put out there about him off the list and where you think he's going to be playing his football?
Yeah, I mean, it was about time. I mean, the you know, I know everything's a process and a formality, but, you know, I mean, it was due. You know, he definitely paid or is in the process of continuing to pay whatever prices and debts to society that he had to. I mean, he missed last year, had to go through a lot of public, you know, humiliation and badgering. I know that his look, let's be honest, his public reputation is now scarred. I don't know how, you know, quickly sponsors are going to be, you know, trying to work with him. So he's in his own personal life. You know, I don't know what his relationship is with his kids and the kid that he did it to. His wife has stood by his side throughout the course of the whole thing. But I think that, you know, when we talk about people paying their debts to society and stuff like that, it needs to be even across the board. You know, I don't think there should be a case where for some individuals we're all for giving them a second chance, and that's what America is about, being able to redeem yourself. I mean, we all know Martha Stewart. You know, she went to prison. She's doing just fine. There's a lot of people in corporate America, television, things of that nature, that have done bad things, and they've been able to continue on with their lives and their careers. I mean, how can we forget Tony Parker? For the San Antonio Spurs, you know, he's off having an affair with his teammate Rick Barry's wife. So there's a lot of stuff that goes on. We sweep this stuff under the rug for certain guys, other guys we want to. So I'm just a person who believes let's keep it even across the board. And Adrian Peterson has pretty much done everything, to my knowledge, that he was asked or required to do up to this point to be able to get off that list. As far as from a football standpoint, I think the Minnesota Vikings are in a tough predicament. But I would not trade Adrian Peterson. I think the Vikings have a team, and you look at the landscape of the NFC as to where, you know, they probably 3 years from now, and that's what I'm thinking, that you figure Bridgewater, those young wide receivers, you know, like I'm going out and get Mike Wallace. They got a very young, talented defense. We've seen what Mike Zimmer was able to do in his first year. So, you know, maybe 2-3 years down the road, I think Minnesota probably will be in a position, if they can keep everything together and their players keep progressing, to make a serious push in the playoffs. But at that point, Peterson will be 32, 33. So, you know, I think this is a business decision for Minnesota. I mean, look, as much as you want Adrian Peterson, the player, if it's still going to be keeping sponsors, and let's face it, that was the real reason that the Minnesota Vikings chose to distance themselves from Adrian Peterson. If you recall, he served a one-game suspension. Minnesota welcomed him back. And as soon as sponsors, that money, said, well, you know, if you're going to have this guy on your team, then we don't want to have nothing to do with you. We're taking our sponsorship money. That's when they made an executive and business decision. So I think their organization, their management, has their work cut out, because you have a guy who doesn't want to be there. Look, let's face it, we've seen some pretty good running backs have a year off and never be the same. And if he's disgruntled, he's unhappy, he's not giving 100%, do you want that around your locker room? Do you want that around your team? But at the same token, giving up a player's magnitude in this year's draft, at least in my estimation, I don't see enough talent across the board where draft picks will possibly compensate. So, I mean, to let him go, you know, business-wise, it may be a good move, because they'll certainly free up a lot of cap room. And like I said, they got a young, great nucleus of players. They got a brand-new head coach in his second year. So I know it's a certain type of identity, you know, that this team is trying to take on. So I think you sit there and you split it down the middle, saying, well, geez, on one end, we don't want to give up one of the best running backs in the NFL, who without question will take a hell of a lot of pressure off of Teddy Bridgewater in the offense. But at the same time, he is 30. If he's going to be unhappy, he's going to be disgruntled, it's going to be a lot of outside interference and distraction, what can we possibly conjure up? And more than anything, can we package a deal to get him out of the NFC? I'm a firm believer in trading outside of your conference.
I hear
if you.
You
are going to make a move like that. So,
right.
Yeah, that's kind of my take on things, Jerry.
Okay. And not to end on a negative note, but I'm going to have to, because I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on this. This is from ProFootballTalk.com. They've obtained through NBC a copy of the complaint filed Thursday against former Florida State quarterback Jameis Winston. The lawsuit, this is the lawsuit that came against Jameis Winston, contains a potentially ominous allegation that could, in theory, derail Winston's bid to become the first overall pick in the up-and-coming draft. On October 25, 2013, plaintiff's victim advocate at FSU informed her that a second woman had come forward and reported being sexually assaulted by Winston. The complaint alleges that paragraph 13. So within that lawsuit, that that was filed today, about the everyone knows that he had a sexual assault charge levied against him, that he was failed to be prosecuted on because of lack of evidence, and the university didn't see any wrongdoing, that the alleged victim filed the lawsuit today and also alluded to a second victim of a sexual assault. Now, I don't know if you guys knew about this, but what's your thoughts on the overall scenario or what's taking place here 2 weeks before the draft? Go to Jeff and then Lance.
Yeah, this doesn't look good for Winston. I can't imagine an NFL team wanting to roll the dice with this guy. I mean, I don't know him personally. I don't know all the intimate details of his situation, but he looks like somebody who uses very poor judgment, and I can't imagine using a high first-round pick and putting this guy as quarterback of an NFL team.
Lance.
Yeah, I think it's unfortunate, the timing of it all for him. I honestly think that kind of similar to O.J. Simpson's situation, meaning that in my own eyes and opinions, this is how I feel, that basically if you get accused of something, I'm using O.J. Simpson when this is his first trial with Nicole and this thing with Jameis Winston and his rape allegations. I honestly feel like sometimes if a person gets off the hook the first time for something that people feel they are guilty for, it seems like the powers that be are not going to rest until that individual gets back in trouble. Now, granted, we'll put an asterisk next to OJ. His actions afterwards were certainly those of his own. But to my knowledge, Jameis Winston, and again, he's a kid. You know, people really trip me out. What, an 18, 19-year-old kid? I mean, I think about myself. I think we all think about ourselves at 18 or 19 or 20. Now, again, these are rape charges, so I'm certainly not making an excuse for that. But when you hear about immaturity and things of that nature, I don't care what player it is or any person. When you're young, you need to have a good foundation of people around you. And if he doesn't have that, he's going to fail. If he can get that, he'll ultimately will succeed. I think that was a part you've seen with the Arizona Cardinals going out when they got Tyrann Mathieu. He was a guy who was known to get in a lot of trouble, but putting him around guys like Larry Fitzgerald and Patrick Peterson and guys who can kind of take him under his wings and help him out really helps. But I, again, long story short, I just think it's funny how these things work out, because we want to sit up here and blast Jameis Winston and, you know, teams shouldn't pick him in the first round and this, that, and the other. But, I mean, it's like, come on, can we all, you know, people tend to forget, you know, it's like, you know, Dan Marino, you know, this guy, I know he's not playing anymore, but I'm just looking at it from the standpoint of notable individuals who have an influence on society. That's what we're talking about. Ultimately, the issue with Jameis Winston, why should he be a face of a franchise? Why should he be a face of a league? Why should he be taken so high when it's negative publicity that's coming behind him? Well, hell, I mean, Dan Marino a couple years ago, you know, got caught paying a lady under the table that he got pregnant outside of his marriage, had a kid with, he's paying underneath the table over at NBC or CBS or whatever. You know, I mean, you got a ton of cases and instances like that where these things are happening, but it's made light of or it gets swept under the table. And I think that's the beauty of internet radio nowadays, that, you know, we don't have our hands and our mouths tied to where we can't say something. and things like that are not allowed to get spoken on TV. How every time when they wanted, we used to mention Terrell Owens, that he's this huge locker room distraction and he's this bad guy, yet he never did anything off the field to get in trouble and did a lot of stuff in his community. Yet you look at a guy like Brett Favre who was abusing painkillers, and that never came up when he was getting, being the first player spoken about, whatever. So I just think it's some of this stuff is really just a case of the media picking and choosing who and how they want to make people look, and unfortunately how do we want to look. And unfortunately for society, that's what we base our perceptions and opinions of people on, is based on what we hear in the news, what we see on TV, and a lot of times it may not be 100% true or factual. So it's pretty interesting. But for Winston himself, I just think it's bad timing. He's got enough bad publicity and a black eye on him already coming into the draft. Or so for a story to leak out, 2 weeks prior to, you would have to think that people are not really pulling for this guy to be the number one pick and be successful in Tampa Bay, if that's where he goes.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you guys giving me your opinions on various topics that were at hand, including the NBA playoffs. I'm going to go to both of you guys, excuse me, to give me some closing remarks if you have them. If you don't, that's fine, too, so we can get out of here and enjoy the rest of the evening. I'll go to Jeff first and then Lance, and then we'll be out of here. Jeff.
It's been a pleasure. Tune in next week.
Okay. How about you, Lance?
Yeah, just real quick, since I didn't get to touch on the playoffs, I would just say to me, I think Cleveland is a no-brainer in the East. It's amazing the power shift that LeBron James can cause to leave Miami. Last year, they were the number two seed coming in. They chose to lose down the stretch to get a better run in. But now Miami's not making it in. And the team that LeBron is on, I know Kevin Love came there, but it's amazing the power shift that LeBron has in the East. Now the Cavs are the perennial favorite. I don't see anything stopping them. And I do think in the West that the Spurs and Golden State are the two teams who are best positioned to get in the finals. If the Spurs, Golden State, and the Cavaliers, if one of those three teams don't win a championship, if obviously Cleveland does not make the championship, or San Antonio or Golden State out the West, wow, that would be amazing, because I cannot imagine a finals that does not feature Cleveland versus Golden State or Cleveland versus San Antonio. So it'll be interesting to see if anybody can overcome those teams in the playoffs.
Okay. With that being said, I want to thank you guys for joining me tonight. For those people who have been listening, tune in next week, same time, same place, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Jeff and I will be the two co-hosts. Maybe Lance will jump back in again, 8 p.m. on the East Coast on Thursdays. And we'll be talking about the playoffs, because they'll be in full force by the time we talk next week this time. And 1 week closer to the NFL draft. Also, tune in on Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where Vic and I will be on the FSP show. And we'll be knocking it down, talking about various topics in sports, probably some of what we've been talking about today. And also on Sunday, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, I started it last week, and I'm going to restart it again. 2 weeks ago, I had 1.0, which would be the mock draft for this NFL season. This Sunday will be the mock draft 2.0. We'll go down 1 to 32 on who I think is going to be drafted in the NFL draft coming up in starting April 30th. But besides that, tune in next week. We'll be here talking about whatever. And then, with that being said, we're out of here. No music. I'm just dropping a mic and leaving. See ya.